With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Friday, November 10th. Coming up in today's show, I am at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Annual Convention in Kansas City, Missouri. We'll have some interviews from the event. But we start this morning with Brian German.
Controlling Botrytisvaria in walnuts is best achieved through an integrated approach, which includes using selective hand pruning in orchards. Themis Michelides is a plant pathologist at UC Davis, who primarily conducts his research in laboratories at the Kearney Agricultural Research and Extension Center in Parlier. He explained how successful that hand pruning has proved to be in controlling the disease in their research studies.
The selective hand pruning is to remove those blighted shoots and branches that you suspect are killed by Botrytisvaria. By just removing that and not doing a normal random pruning, that results into a significant reduction of spore inoculum for this fungi. And we did an experiment in which we showed by just doing that selective pruning, you can increase the control of the disease by 80%.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
And we go to Taylor Hillman now.
At the Citrus Research Board's California Citrus Conference, Beth Grafton Cardwell talked about a program she's been doing to put some efficacy numbers on treatments for Asian citrus psyllids in Southern California.
Yeah, I got some federal funding. We call it MAC funding. And what I've done is hire 4 people to sample different regions of Southern California where the psyllid is common and try and see, looking at grower orchards, when they treat them, what happens to the psyllid populations. And these samplers go every 2 weeks and they monitor 40 to 50 orchards each. So I've got about 180 orchards in the program. And we're getting some really good information about how well the insecticides control the psyllids and what's happening in different regions, because there are different things happening.
Grafton Caldwell said that difference is blatantly clear, and the results may show some practices need to be changed soon. Stay with AgNet West for her recommendations for growers. I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
The final agricultural trade numbers are in for the 2017 fiscal year. The results may surprise you. Gary Crawford reports.
Agriculture Department analysts had been projecting that in fiscal year 2017, which ended September 30th, the U.S. would export $139.8 billion worth of ag products.
And it clocked in at 140.5.
Oh, but in this case, you know, I guess you analysts don't mind being wrong.
Yeah, that's correct.
USDA trade analyst Bryce Cook. So exports did do better than expected, coming in $10.9 billion or 8% higher than 2016. The ag trade surplus, 28% higher, mostly because of gains in bulk commodity exports.
Wheat was up 21% in value terms. Soybeans was up 17%, and corn was up 6%.
Cotton, the big winner, though, up 70% in value, 50% in volume. Now, why did U.S. exports do so well?
The dollar is still generally weak, and you have had pretty decent income growth in developing countries. Those are a growing percent of where U.S. goods are sold.
And Cook says the U.S. had plenty of good quality product to sell. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Research is ongoing into the potential of winter peas as an alternate crop to winter wheat in dryland farming rotations. Rod Bain reports.
The dryland farming practices of the inland Pacific Northwest region, areas such as the Palouse and Columbia Basin of Washington State, Oregon, and Idaho, has been over time fairly consistent from a crop rotation standpoint. And that rotation, according to Washington State University researcher Bill Schillinger, is based on zones of annual precipitation. In particular, the driest of these dryland farming precipitation zones, which receives an average of less than 12 inches of rainfall annually.
Where these farmers, since the land was broken out 135 years ago out of native bunch grass and sagebrush, the rotation has been pretty much winter wheat, summer fallow.
And Schillinger adds that's not from lack of research and effort to introduce new crops. Basically, the winter wheat, summer fallow rotation offers the most stability, profitability, and efficient use of limited moisture. Now, there appears to be a promising alternative to winter wheat, winter pea.
They're very stable. They're winter hardy. You don't have to add nitrogen. And the crop after the winter pea does better than after winter wheat because winter peas use less water and they also adding nitrogen to the soil.
Winter pea appears to be a crop growers in the low rainfall areas of the inland Pacific Northwest are interested in, with planted acreage going from 0 to 30,000 in a five-year period.
We're predicting it's going to be about 60,000 next cycle, because farmers are really interested. I have several farmers right around our research station. They're just saying this is a no-brainer. It's easy to grow. It's stable. It makes it through the winter.
Part of the producer-based excitement stems from potential profitability.
Farmers can recognize the benefits that they're getting and their adjusted gross returns. It's going head-to-head with winter wheat on profitability.
Not only that, but new varieties of winter peas are currently in R&D.
Both from the USDA ARS lentil breeding program, but also the private sector that have a bigger seed. They have a clear seed coat. They have a smooth seed coat. And when you split them, they make a nice clean split without the particle chipping. The edible dry pea market is very discerning. They want those qualities.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. This week's Western View is coming up after the break. We will be back in just a moment.
Control weeds from the start with the proven long-lasting power of Chateau Herbicide SW. Chateau controls more than 90 annual broadleaf and grass weeds in orchards and vineyards, including marestail, fleabane, mallow, and more. Unlike the competition, Chateau can be applied to non-bearing orchards and vineyards after planting for early protection. Take control and keep control of tough weeds with Chateau Herbicide. To learn more, talk to your PCA or visit valent.com/chateau. Always read and follow label instructions.
Step right up and gaze upon this miraculous substance I hold in the palm of my hands. This little miracle can feed us, clothe us, give us clean, fresh water, and provide wildlife habitat for nature's critters. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the greatest soil on Earth.
Learn more about soil health principles that can turn your soil into a star performer. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out how. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
There's nothing convenient about losing profit. A two-implant program utilizing component TE200 with Tylan as the terminal implant increases feed efficiency by 3.8% over Revelor XS. That's more than a $15 feed savings per animal. And only Elanco's component implants give you the added benefit of Tylan's abscess defense. Contact your Elanco sales rep or visit elanco.us/implants today. The label contains complete use information, including cautions and warnings. Always read, understand, and follow label directions.
We all have challenges, and as an almond grower, you're no exception. From grinding in the summer to planting in the off-season, you're put to the test every year. Let us help you turn those challenges into opportunities. Join Almond Board of California at the Sacramento Convention Center from December 5th through the 7th to learn what new research, technology, and equipment means for your operation. Industry experts want to speak with you. Are you ready to take hold of your next opportunity? Register for the Almond Conference today at almondconference.com.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills.
Our math. Our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water. Your air. Your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills, our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination, our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
AgNet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. AgNet West's team of Sabrina Hill.
As crews continue to fight the Detweiler fire in Mariposa County.
Brian German.
Weedy rice has been a growing concern for California farmers.
And myself, Taylor Hillman. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network and online at agnetwest.com.
When I'm fooling around on the internet, one of my favorite things to do is cruise through the agriculture crowdfunding sites. Some of these sites are on the cutting edge of ag science, and the next big thing may be sitting right there on a web page waiting to be discovered. Others are quirky, featuring the dreams and schemes of small farmers around the country. The big things are on sites like AgFunder, the little ones on sites like BarnRaiser.us. Most of the people on BarnRaiser are experienced growers hoping to expand their small business. They're not asking for much, from $10 to $100 or so from individuals, and the reward to the investor is a big thank you and a chance to share in the dream. It's a way for people with a little extra to help out fellow farmers who are working hard to build something new. It's people like Diane Graves and Kirsten Eggers in Malaga, Washington. They raise hogs, or did until a devastating fire destroyed their barns and their livestock. They're rebuilding to produce hogs. One of their biggest markets are the local 4-H and FFA kids that like to show, and they like to teach them to show. And they sell home-raised pork. Go read their story. You're liable to dig into your pocket and share a little. New Jersey-based farmer Meg Pasca grows market vegetables and flowers for a 45-member CSA. She has 75 egg-laying hens, honeybees, and a small herd of dairy goats. She wants to scale up her goat operation and expand her goat's milk soap business, which sells out at their farm stand and in their online store. She says this is the way she can get those goats to help pay the rent. BarnRaiser.us is a place where people give small amounts, and it adds up to a big helping hand. Remember, if you have questions or comments for me, my email is len@lenwilcox.com. And that's the Western view from AgNet West.
Well, in today's livestock news, the World Health Organization issued a strong statement this week against the use of all antibiotics in healthy food-producing animals. The WHO says overuse and misuse of antibiotics in both animals and humans is contributing to the buildup of antibiotic resistance. The organization notes that some bacteria that cause serious diseases in humans have built resistance to most types of treatment options, and there are very few options in the research pipeline. WHO says 80% of antibiotic use is in the animal sector, with most usage promoting animal growth instead of treating disease. The agency says healthy animals should only be treated if disease has been diagnosed in other members of the herd or flock. Antibiotics should also be chosen from the group of medicines that the WHO considers least important to human health. But the National Pork Producers Council called a ban on disease prevention uses of antibiotics in animal food production ill-advised and wrong. They say denying pigs, cows, and chickens necessary antibiotics would be unethical and immoral, leading to animal suffering and possibly death, and could compromise the nation's food system. American pork farmers share the WHO's concern about the rise in antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which is why they have taken steps over the past 30 years to ensure they're using antibiotics strategically and responsibly to keep animals healthy and to produce safe food. MPPC says they are complying with an FDA directive that prohibits the use of antibiotics important to human medicine for promoting animal growth, and that requires feed and water uses of those same antibiotics to be under a veterinary prescription. They also participate in pork industry developed programs that include responsible antibiotic use and supports federal efforts to track antibiotic resistance and foodborne bacteria from humans, retail meats, and food animals. MPPC says prevention uses of antibiotics involve administering antimicrobial drugs to animals that aren't exhibiting clinical signs of disease, but that likely will get disease if a drug isn't administered. They say veterinary involvement in the decision-making process associated with the use of medically important antimicrobial drugs is not only as important aspect of ensuring appropriate use, but for feed and water uses, it's the law. They say additionally, using antibiotics to prevent disease in most cases supplants the need to use medically important antibiotics to treat disease. According to the National Pork Producers Council, the U.S. pork industry's goal is to reduce the needs for antibiotics, and it has devoted time and resources to that end, including adopting good antibiotic stewardship practices and studying alternatives to antibiotics. And they say simply reducing on-farm uses of antibiotics, as the WHO suggests, would likely have no effect on public health and would jeopardize animal health. MPPC says the WHO's calls for stopping the use of antibiotics that are critically important in human medicine for treating infected animals is anti-ethical to pork farmers and veterinarians' moral obligation to care for their pigs. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Grapes are not one of our major crops grown in America, but they're just as important to the people who grow them and the ones who use them as our biggest crops. They give us the fine jams and jellies. Our richest growing area is in the West, particularly California, but grape farming is showing rapid growth in the eastern half of our country, too. I don't know how many varieties of grapes we grow, but I do know that winemaking claims use of most of the grapes that we do grow. I'd love to tell you more about winemaking, but, most of the premium grades and the most expensive brands are Italian names, and I can't go there. Grapes are not the easiest crop to grow, and timing is vital from blooming to picking. Grapes, a lot more important than you think. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, AgNet West.
I am at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, Missouri this week, and that is where we get today's interview.
Okay, I'm Tracy Harris, Senior Director of Sales for Central Life Sciences.
Okay, and you have a number of products and things that we can discuss today. Let's work our way north to south in California. Okay. What are some things you have for northern areas?
Okay, in the northern areas, first of all, Central Life Sciences, our focus is on insect management. So we're not working with the crop sides of the business. We're working it post-harvest, if you will. So north to south, okay. So actually way far north would be into ranch country. We do Altacid IGR for horn fly control and beef. Then you drop down in that Yuba City north at rice market area. We'll be doing some products like Dicon IGR Plus and our Sentinel products for insect management in stored grains. North to south, dropping down into the almond market, the ant control. So ant control is a very important part of our business in that we have a bait that we bait the ants and control them before harvest. And then obviously in livestock, I mean, that Central Valley is such, it's the breadbasket of the world. What a great place to be, and all the buzz and excitement there, and obviously there's insects there. So fly control and dairy and poultry and livestock, we've got some new clearances in equine and swine, so it's just an exciting area to work.
Let's go the other way now, starting south to north. Let's talk a little bit more, focusing in on starting with some of the fly control and other dairy. What should dairy producers be looking for when they're choosing a product to really help keep their businesses running smoothly as far as insect control?
Sure. Well, any insect, if you really think about insect management, you really need to think through what is my challenge, what do I need to control, and how should I go about controlling that? We promote integrated pest management solutions. Some of those are going to be just management practices that might help clean and dry, keep the weeds mowed, keep it dry. That will help in a lot of ways. Then when you get into control areas, do you want to use bag traps, jug traps to trap them, or do you need baits? Do you need sprays? Do you need feed-through products? An example in dairy, obviously, we have our Clarifly product, which is a feed-through. It's going to work in all the manure that's being produced where the flies will lay their eggs. But if there's spill feed somewhere, a fly can lay eggs there too. So you may need baits or sprays to supplement that in a program approach. We've got a team of guys, that's what they do. They come out and they do fly audits. They help the dairyman manage that process, working with feed companies and animal health distribution.
How about for ant control in almonds? What do growers need to be looking for there?
Well, obviously the red imported fire ant is a damaging ant to they are protein feeders. So it would be a damaging ant to the almonds after they shake them off the tree, right?
Right.
That ant can damage the nut. And obviously, a high-value crop like that, you don't want any damage. You don't want any blemishes. And so we help control that prior to harvest.
Is that only for almonds, or are you approved for other tree nuts as well?
No, that product is actually labeled for all food crops. We have a big play in the citrus market as well, and obviously in the Florida market, it's a big market for us as well. But that product can go on pastures. It can go anywhere there's fire ants. We can help with the control. And we have some other products for the homeowner area, golf courses and turf, and that would be our Extinguish for food crops, Extinguish Plus for turf.
Okay. All right, and then moving up, let's talk about rice.
Rice. Okay. I'm from Mississippi, so that's one of my favorite things, rice. But that rice market, you got a really neat rice market there, a lot of specialty high-dollar type export type potentials there. The Sentinel product would be used to control rice weevil. Our Daikon product would be used to control the non-weevils. In other words, your lesser grain borer or any other beetles that might be a problem in the stored rice.
And then do you want to go over, did you have something else there?
Yeah, we have on our website, bugfreegrains.com. If people need to help identify which insect they're having a challenge with, then go there. We got flashcards for the sales reps to use. We've got the tools to help people identify and learn what control measures they're available.
You know, I was going to bring that up to you when you were talking about dairy and how you'll have people that will actually go out to the dairies and really help the producers figure out what their issues are and how the best way is to treat it.
Well, I think that really if a person looks at, they want to get rid of the flies. They want to control the insects. But if they have a plan, it helps them. So what we've tried to do is work with their suppliers, either the feed companies or the animal health distributors, and work with them on putting a plan together. And by putting that plan together and managing it or monitoring it, they can know whether it's working or not, and then identify areas that, okay, I've got a lot of, in some markets, wet brewer's grains or something like that that is creating a fly pressure problem, and it has nothing to do with where the animals are. So we're trying to help them think through clean, dry, reduce the places where insects can reproduce, and then apply the products that they need into that. So that's kind of our approach. We can find on the Central Fly Control would be a good source for that. It shows our IPM programs. People can go to Central Life Sciences. They can see the bigger picture. We're into mosquito control. We're into a lot of different areas, but we're focused on insect management.
Give us that website one more time, please.
CentralLifeSciences.com.
Thank you for your time today. We are again at Central Life Sciences, visiting with them in Kansas City, Missouri, for the NAFB annual convention. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West, and we will be back in just a moment.
Control weeds from the start with the proven long-lasting power of Chateau Herbicide SW. Chateau controls more than 90 annual broadleaf and grass weeds in orchards and vineyards, including marestail, fleabane, mallow, and more. Unlike the competition, Chateau can be applied to non-bearing orchards and vineyards after planting for early protection. Take control and keep control of tough weeds with Chateau Herbicide. To learn more, talk to your PCA or visit valut.com/chateau. Always read and follow label instructions.
Step right up and gaze upon this miraculous substance I hold in the palm of my hands. This little miracle can feed us, clothe us, give us clean, fresh water, and provide wildlife habitat for nature's critters. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the greatest soil on earth.
Learn more about soil health principles that can turn your soil into a star performer. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out how. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
There's nothing convenient about losing profit. A two-implant program utilizing component TE200 with Tylan as the terminal implant increases feed efficiency by 3.8% over Revelor XS. That's more than a $15 feed savings per animal. And only Elanco's component implants give you the added benefit of Tylan's abscess defense. Contact your Elanco sales rep or visit elanco.us/implants today. The label contains complete use information, including cautions and warnings. Always read, understand, and follow label directions.
This is Farm City Newsday. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can get the latest agriculture news from around the state and the nation anytime you want, all on our website, agnetwest.com.
As an almond grower, you work hard all day right from the crack of dawn. You love your crop, your land, and those who helped you raise it. Join Almond Board of California at the Sacramento Convention Center from December 5th through the 7th to learn how your operation can thrive. Hear from industry experts on new innovations and research, and connect with more than 270 exhibitors on the trade show floor and see their products firsthand. You care about your legacy, and the Almond Board does too. Go to almondconference.com to learn more and register.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills,
our math, our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills, our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination, our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. We continue from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, Missouri, with another featured interview.
Kevin Kester, President-elect for National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
All right, Kevin, we are here at the, I want to say NCB, we're here at the NAFB Trade Talk in Kansas City, where I've bumped into you. You, of course, are from California. Tell us a little bit about your operation there in Parkfield.
I represent the fifth generation of my family to the ranch in the central coast of California in southern Monterey County. So my family's been doing that in the area since 1867, and I'm proud to say I've got a couple of young grandkids now, represent the seventh generation on the ranch. So I'm out and about trying to keep everybody successful in the cattle industry for future generations.
And you do, part of what you do is with your service for the Cattlemen's Association, and you, like you said, are coming into it as president-elect next year, coming on. Tell us what you are hoping to achieve and why you've gotten involved.
Boy, there's a bunch of good stuff going on in our industry. So number one, top of mind, is trade. Trade for 2017 has been outstanding for U.S. beef across the world. Our exports across the world are rising, and I think that'll continue into 2018. We've got access now into China, and that is starting small, but it's going to grow. Japan has been a real success story. South Korea, Canada, and Mexico are two of our biggest markets too. So I'm really excited about our trade opportunities, because that's keeping our demand levels up as our U.S. beef herd is increasing and our competition from other protein sectors is increasing. So those export markets are a very key fundamental to keep us successful back at the ranch. So as we talk, I'm hopeful that we'll have some tax reform to talk about going into next year. I'm really excited about the potential for permanent full repeal potentially of a death tax. So there's a lot of things like that in Washington, D.C. that I'm excited to talk about and going to focus on for next year.
There is so much to talk about in Washington, D.C. Like you said, trade is a huge issue, and there's so much that's not known at this time about trade. Is there a little concern there?
There is. The administration is has a little bit of a populist mentality when it comes to some of our trade agreements. I happen to be a part of the Secretary of Agriculture's and Trade Ambassador's Advisory Committee for Trade. So I get to have access and talk directly to the Secretary and the Trade Ambassador. Like things like NAFTA, that's, as you know, we're in the middle of negotiations on different rounds for NAFTA. And it's important to make sure that for agriculture, specifically beef, that we suffer no harm, because right now in NAFTA, U.S. beef into Canada and Mexico, we have no tariffs, no quota limitations, and so it's pretty hard to improve on that.
And we're talking about a major bottom line issue, if you will, when we're discussing trading with Canada and Mexico. What could it mean if we lose that?
Canada and Mexico are two of our biggest trading partners for beef. If we lose that market, each one of them is close to $1 billion a piece. And so that's $2 billion that could be interrupted in trade for beef alone, and that could drastically affect our bottom lines and market prices.
Let me ask you this. If somebody is listening and is not in the beef industry and is thinking, well, you know, what do I care if those beef producers are losing out on something on their bottom line? Does this affect people outside of the beef industry in America?
Absolutely does affect, because all of us live in our local small communities, and when ranchers and farmers are not having good years, they can't spend dollars in their local communities, and those economic drivers are contracted, and it has a detrimental effect to the local businessman, the hardware store, the barber shop, the grocery store, and all our local merchants. It does have an effect when we can't spend our money locally.
So there's that trickle-down effect, if you will. So if people who are listening maybe have not been involved, have not been paying too much attention to trade, or they hear about it, don't understand it, now want to know more, can you suggest some resources?
Absolutely. You can go to the U.S. Trade Representative's website or Google it, USTR, U.S. Trade Representative, and even the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They have a undersecretary now that's just responsible for trade, Undersecretary Ted McKinney. So a person can look at those things. You can go on National Cattlemen's Beef Association website, Beef USA, and we have some trade information there too.
All right. Thanks for taking some time with me today.
Thanks, Sabrina. Good to see you.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.